Welcome to another episode of our Funcast series. Fun is the shortcut for Frauenumweltnetzwerk, in English translation Female Environmental Network, and we are a university group working with the aim to foster gender equality in MINT plus disciplines at TU Dresden. The network exists since 2017 and was implemented by the Faculty of Environmental Science. Ever since, we have been offering roundtables, networking events like excursions and free trainings with the overall aim to support women during their professional and academic career. Our main target audience are students, but also employees at the Technical University of Dresden. So in this episode, we want to talk about mental health issues, and I'm absolutely overwhelmed to announce today's guest, Anja Wiede, who is currently working at the complaints office at the Technical University in Dresden. We are going to talk about the UNICEF project and gender-based violence, the workshop Bringing in the Bystander, diversity-sensitive language, and the TU Dresden directory, and the function and assistance processes of the TU Dresden Complaints Office, and most important, why her work is so important in an academical context. So this should be enough from my side. I would like to welcome Anja Wiede, and for the people who never have heard from the Complaints Office, we would like to ask you to give us some quick insights and some ideas about your daily work and what you, your personal career path until now.
Okay, well, thank you for having me, and I think that's a pretty good start. Well, I'm the contact person for harassment, discrimination, and violence, and also responsible for the complaints office. And I belong to the Pro-Rectorate of University Culture. The complaints office is open to all employees and students in cases of discrimination, harassment, and violence, and in accordance with the guideline for dealing with those incidents. That means if I receive a complaint, I will investigate it. And quite often, people come to me who have experienced or seen various violations of personal boundaries, and then we think about what could be a good way to deal with it, actually. In addition to this work, I also organize various awareness-raising events, for example, in the context of the Week Against Racism or the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. I also give workshops on various topics, such as sexualized violence. For me, it's also very important to network beyond Dresden, because I think harassment, discrimination, and violence unfortunately happen everywhere, and it makes sense to support each other and develop common strategies. And maybe that's also because biographically I was some kind of small leaf in the wind. I studied sociology here in Dresden, ended with a diploma, and my secondary subject was psychology. And well, sometimes I felt quite excluded because of this whole academic habitus. I was the first person in my family to graduate from high school, so I was pretty happy to flee from this one and from the other side. That means I went to Spain as an Erasmus student. But I also took part in different kind of work camps, for example, in Lebanon and Cambodia. And well, at that time, you could also study Latin American studies as an accompanying subject. And I did that and then went to Bolivia after my graduation for working in a women's rights organization. And there we did some kind of research on machist violence in youth relationships. And I also dealt a lot with my own white positioning and the racism against indigenous people there. So phenomena of classism, racism, sexism, ableism, which structure our society or life in like capitalism and somehow hold it together. I always had a critical need to reflect on this and wanted to put it into practice. So back then in Germany, I started studying social work and have since completed it. And at the same time, I had a job with the Gender Equality Commissioner here at TU Dresden. And in between, I did further training as a mediator, and since last week, I'm a certified trainer for feminist self-assertion and self-defense, which is aimed at people who experience the majority of sexualized violence, for example, women, trans, and non-binary people.
Wow, okay, so everyone who could have look at my face right now would have seen that my mouth was open after this really nice CV. Really interesting. Thanks for all these insights. So, yeah, my feeling that you are a really good person to talk about these issues has now grown even more after I've learned so much about you. Thanks for all these. I would directly switch over to the project UNISAFE, which is about gender-based violence. And I don't know if every one of you know something about this project, but amongst 45 European universities and research institutes, the Technical University in Dresden is participating at this UNISAFE project. This project is about gender-based violence and as well institutional responses with the aim to build a knowledge base which is then translated into operational tools to make universities and research organizations safer. The overall subject is to capture the mechanisms of gender-based violence, including its effects within research institutes and the academic environment, using institutional case studies and qualitative interviews, as far as I understood it correctly.
Get it.
Furthermore, the results shall be integrated into political guidelines and simultaneously enable a higher security of action in handling gender-based violence for students and employees in academic context. However, I was wondering why it is actually necessary to research on this large scale about gender-based violence in an academic or even professional context. Could you please explain this a little bit to me and also give some more background information about the links between gender-based violence and its further negative effects on a professional and individual private level from your personal perspective?
Well, first of all, maybe for those who don't know what gender-based violence is, gender-based violence refers to forms of violence that are directed against a person or persons because of their gender, or that disproportionately affect persons of a particular gender. The majority of violence, regardless of which gender is directed against, is perpetrated by men. Women and people who do not fit into the heteronormative image, such as non-binary person, trans persons, agender persons, but also homosexuals, bisexuals, are particularly often affected or more often affected, and differently marginalized persons such as disabled persons or racialized persons or women, non-binary persons and trans persons are also affected even more frequently. This is called intersectionality. Intersectionality means that social categories such as gender, ethnicity, nation or class cannot be conceptualized in isolation from each other, but must be analyzed in their like interweavings or intersections. And in the UNISAFE context, the issue is then more concrete on sexualized discrimination and violence refers to any psychological, physical or verbal behavior with a sexual reference that is perceived by the person affected as border crossing. That means behavior that is unwanted and degrading or hurtful or is aimed at achieving this effect. What is a boundary crossing for one person does not have to be so far for another. Also, the same action in different settings or by a different person can feel completely different. For example, if I'm in the crowded Mensa at 12 o'clock and someone bumps my bottom once they walk by because they're pushing their way through, it might not feel good, but it might not have been intentional. But if it's just me and one another person or one other person in the canteen, then the setting changes and my perceiving changes. And perpetrators do not only act out of sexual intention and are not concerned with consensual sexual contact. Instead, perpetrators use sexually connoted and sexually charged expressions and actions to exercise power and superiority. On campus, it can be like a variety of behaviors, for example, obscene or humiliating remarks like different jokes, facial expressions or gestures, indiscreet questioning about bodies, about lifestyles or love lives. It could be some kind of inappropriate compliments or gifts, invitations to private homes to discuss exam results, intrusive looks, proposals and unwanted requests to get to know each other better. Unwanted proximity or touching, stalking, in person or digitally, unwanted solicitation, enforcing of sexual favors of acts, well, or physical assault or attempted rape. And of course, this also happens off campus. Every second or to third days in 2021, a woman in Germany died because of the hands of her partner. That in turn is called femicide, for example. And regardless of whether it happens in private or on campus, if it happens by a friend or a fellow student, a work colleague or a professor, it naturally has an impact on your study or your work life. When I have to deal with incidents like this kind, I have hardly any resources or capacity left to concentrate on other things, neither in my private nor in my professional life. Beyond the potential initial physical injury, including ongoing poor physical and mental health and various stress-related disorders. For example, gender-based violence can lead to drug and alcohol abuse, to eating and sleep disorders, to poor self-esteem, post-traumatic stress disorder, smoking, unsafe sexual behavior, self-harm, and even suicide. And this person being affected at university may have to go through different challenges also, because they maybe attend the same seminar as the perpetrator or share the same office. If one then stays away from the university, it can lead to social isolation, no more study or parties of students, like, or material from the subject is not understood, exams are not written or are written with a bad note at the end, the thesis is not completed, the standard period of study is not adhered to, the BAföG is cancelled and no one can no longer afford to study, or the degree is delayed, and this is some kind of existential crisis and it becomes super visible. So if you then consider how much value is placed on so-called normal biographies, then it must actually become clear that the access to university life is not the same between the gender due to the various experiences of violence, and that career path can simply be severely restricted. And apart from the impact on the person being involved, such incidents also has damaging consequences for the university and the campus community as a whole. Inadequate prevention and response to such violence perpetuates the problem and puts other students at risk. Furthermore, inadequate response sends the message that such violence is tolerated within the institution and that the institution is not fulfilling its obligations and academic purpose. Inaction also promotes a general tolerance of gender-based violence. And the UNICEF's research project is clearly about not only establishing missing statistics that finally cover non-binary people, for example, but also, and more importantly, developing strategies of prevention within a European framework. And this is an absolutely empty space, and therefore it's great that the TU Dresden is involved in this project.
Wow, that was really a vast amount of information and insights. I'm really happy to have been in this position to have learned all these interlinkages, because I don't know how you feel on the other end of your audio box right now, but for me there were some interlinkages or connections I would have not gathered by myself so far. So thank you very much for all of these. And having said that, I would be highly interested to what I, as a potentially affected individual, can do against gender-based violence in an academic context.
Well, it's actually pretty essential to develop an awareness of one's own limits and an understanding of consent. Each person should be able to ask and answer the question, do I really want to do this now? Can I say no? Or can I communicate well to the other person that my boundary has been crossed here? Or do I then fear negative consequences? That is, for example, that my partner will break up with me, or that I will get a lower grade, for example. So the advice is, listen to your needs, listen to your boundaries. They have the right to exist. And as hard as it is sometimes, you are totally allowed to say no or to say stop it. Like, female socialized people in particular are not taught much about saying no, or often others don't take it seriously. So therefore, also pay attention to the boundaries of others. If someone tells you that somebody is overstepping their boundaries, stand by them and speak up for them. It's also important that those persons being affected do not blame themselves for various incidents. You were not wearing a skirt that was too short and you did not say anything wrong. The person who crosses your line is the only one who is responsible for the incident. And if something does happen, I would emphasize that there is never one like plan that applies to all people. Some people prefer to keep all those kind of information to themselves, others want to deal with it more publicly. I would advise each person to talk about it in any case, even if it's only a vague feeling at first. Talk about it either with a close person like a friend, it's more about her catching you, or you can talk to someone very far away, such as a helpline against violence or a counseling center. And in addition to the university gender equality commissioners, like from the faculty, but also from the university, there are also organizations here in Dresden, such as Sowieso e.V. or Gerede e.V., that will listen to you confidentially and, if possible, anonymously. They also know what to do, like they can also show you other kind of ways. You can also seek psychological support or take part in empowerment workshops. In October, there will also be an assertiveness course at the university, for example. Yeah, and the other ways can be related to the perpetrator. That means you can take legal action, you can report it to the police or to your supervisor, to a trusted person in the teaching staff, to the housekeeping of your student resistance, or initiate a complaint procedure here at the university. Well, at the end, it's important to note that only the affected person themselves know which ways is theirs. No other person has to decide what would be better.
Okay, I have one additional question, if it's possible. Mm-hmm. What is an assertiveness course? I've never heard that. Can you explain?
Well, it's when you want to self-defense yourself. Mm-hmm. You firstly need to get to know your boundaries. You need to know your appearance, and this is some kind of assertiveness.
Ah, okay. Thanks for that. So the Technical University acknowledged and subsequently reacted to the movements of #MeToo and #MeTooInScience, encouraging those affected to speak up about sexualized violence in academic contexts, with a guideline of how to deal with harassment, discrimination and violence. Further, the results of the TU Dresden diversity monitoring showed that harassment, discrimination and violence also happened at our university. So, the Technical University in Dresden. How did the university react to this in particular?
Mm-hmm. Well, sexual harassment, discrimination and violence actually is a structural pillar of our society. So the fact that this also happens at our university, as it does at other universities and in other areas of society, is not special news, but the commitment is different. By setting up the complaints office, the TU Dresden is emphasizing its responsibility to care, and that's something really great, I think. By reporting cases here, discrimination and protection gaps become visible. For example, protection against digital violence is a very, very big gap, actually, which we are now responding to by evaluating the guideline. And there's also a compliance management system, which is currently being introduced, including a digital whistleblower platform where those being affected can anonymously report if something has happened to them. And, well, we are also doing some kind of visible awareness raising measures, also shaped the university culture last year on the International Day for Elimination of Violence Against Women. The rectorate was illuminated in orange in accordance with the campaign Orange the World. On 17th of May, the progressive pride flag was raised on the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, Biphobia and Interphobia. And this year, for example, we are going to show the film Picture a Scientist on 25th of November, which deals with sexualized violence against female scientists at universities. So, well, we are also acquired the license for the Bringing in the Bystander workshops, which are aimed at students and sensitize them to sexualized violence, actually.
All right. I don't know why, but these are really heavy topics to talk about from my own personal perspective. So I feel a little bit more seen right now after having heard that there are so many attempts to kind of handle these difficult topics and to make the life as a female understood person a little bit easier, just to make it even more visible in this university context. Mm-hmm. So thanks for all these insights again. Could you kindly explain, because you're also offering this workshop, bringing in the bystander, what is it about and why it is so special?
Well, most workshops or trainings on sexualized violence focus on either perpetrators or survivors of incidents like this. And this workshop is explicitly about the fact that we are all witnesses to these incidents, even if we are maybe not affected. It means we see it in our own family, maybe on the train or in the seminar room. And then we often say, oh, that's a private matter, or it's none of our businesses, or we don't dare to do anything because we don't know how. So the workshops are about raising awareness and, well, that sexualized violence never happens in isolation, but always in a social context. And we try to communicate that one can intervene in cases of sexualized violence at different times, like one can take preventive actions, you can intervene during an incident, or you can interact after an incident, for example, by accompanying your friend to a counseling center or something like that. And it's also about conveying that every person has different abilities. So some may be particularly courageous and go directly into the situations. Other may be more passive and they try to get help somewhere else. And that's completely okay. It's just important that we work together to prevent sexualized and intimate partner violence of this kind, and that we raise awareness and that we take a stand against it and intervene in solidarity when incidents occur.
Okay, cool. That sounds like a really holistic approach.
It is.
Incidences or topics. The very first step in this context is to identify personal boundary violations, which can be applied to both the private and the academic or professional sphere. How can I recognize the violations as a person affected and as a bystander? I don't know, we have talked about these assertiveness courses just some minutes before, but maybe you can, lend me some more.
Well, of course, it's very difficult to give a general answer. It often starts with like a strange feeling as a result of a certain action, both as a person being affected or as a bystander. You may feel some kind of disappointment, frustration, anger, shame, or helplessness. And as an affected person, I will notice this much more quickly than a non-affected person. What is needed here is empathy and solidarity, which has a lot to do with like recognizing different ways of life, I guess. In my opinion, in order to, for example, identify discrimination on the basis of gender, I often ask myself the question, would this also happen to a man? For example, when I'm standing in a bar and a man grabs my hips to walk past me, I ask myself, would that generally happen to a man? Well, I think no. So that's a sexist act for me. And because it didn't happen in consent, it's a boundary crossing from my side, actually. But to recognize sexual boundary crossings, I recommend a book by Sarah Hassan and Juliet Sanchez-Lambert. In German, it's called Grauzonen gibt es nicht. In English, it's There Are No Gray Areas. It's available for free on the internet, and it builds on the knowledge of those being affected and describes what goes on when people abuse their power. And, well, they are using real concrete examples. It shows how harmless situations turn into sexual harassment. And it shows the classic techniques that perpetrators use, takes a look at the toxic environments that enable the behavior and help survivors and bystanders to recognize when a situation is about to go off the rails. Finally, it also presents strategies that can help in such situations.
Perfect. Thank you so much. We will make some more promotion for Ringing in the Bystander. That is for sure. And now I have another book to read soon. Okay. Coming back to the topic. So what are your recommendations for affected people in your function at this consultation office? And could you kindly advise us the connection to the term allyship in this context? Mm-hmm.
Well, people who contact counselors to talk about their experiences of harassment, discrimination, and violence take a lot of courage, we have to say. Often, however, they are denied what they have experienced. Explanations are found for the abusive behavior, and the person itself may be blamed for the incidents. And as a counselor, I think it's therefore utmost importance to trust a person, to communicate to them that their experience is not denied but believed, and that together there can be found ways to resolve like the incident in a victim-centered way. And to get there, the concept of allyship is totally important because on the one hand, it focuses on one's own positioning, and on the other hand, it recognizes the reality of others. The allyship concept comes from like racism research and has meanwhile expanded to all forms of discrimination. Allyship here always refers to relations of power and inequality with the aim of overcoming these relations. An ally is then a person who has certain structural privileges, like a white man, for example, and allies with people who do not have these privileges but experience discrimination. If you want to act as an ally, then you have to think about the following applies, like check your privileges, recognize the forms of discrimination, listen to those being affected, give them space, do not tell them when and how they should talk about their experiences, educate yourself, support and promote those being affected. That means, for example, if I'm invited to a conference on racist discrimination and only white people speak, then it's up to me to point out that the most important perspective actually is missing and that organizers have to take care of it, even if that means that I won't speak at this conference. And another example is gender-inclusive communication. This could be an example of allyship. Like non-binary people or trans people are often misgendered. They are assigned as a false gender from the outside. And actually, this is a form of violence. And to prevent this from happening, many people write their pronoun in their email signature. Then people know which pronoun people want to be addressed with. And I myself belong to the group of people who identify with their biological sex, which fits into the heteronormative picture. And I am also perceived as such by others and do not experience any form of misgendering. It means that I am like a privileged person. But however, so that those affected do not feel exposed like alone, I also write my pronouns in my signature, for example.
Perfect. Really, really good point what you have said with the language on the one hand, and also about the allyship. For me, it was not clear that there are some certain parallels to a mentoring or a mentor, right?
It is.
Yeah, there are some, I would say, because a mentor is also someone who is most of the time a little bit in higher positions, mm-hmm. or has some other experiences and is trying, yeah, to share his knowledge. I mean, not, of course, not the whole time, but maybe. I will think about that a little bit more, make some research, I think. We'll see. Okay, coming back to these diversity-sensitive language, what you've said at the end. In January, the Technical University published the guideline for gender-sensitive language with its four principles. Why can this be rated as a milestone? What was the main motivation and how is it related to the GGTI identification?
Mm-hmm. Language actually is the central instrument of communication and I think understanding the world for us as humans. And it derives anonymous power from this. Like again and again, we experience how on the one hand, the use of language is intentionally applied to disparage or hurt people. And on the other hand, language can also lead to misunderstandings through careless use. And as a means for more equality, for more access and like equal opportunities, a non-discriminatory use of language can contribute to raising awareness. We are committed to a special use of words, terms and attribution and ultimately for making diversity actually visible. And according to the Personal Status Act, we want and must recognize more than just two genders, and this must also be expressed in language. For example, in the use of appropriate forms of address somebody, this means that it must be possible to address people without Mrs. Wieder or Mr. Wieder, because they are like more than two gender. And for this reason, it's also possible at the TU Dresden to have the DGTI identity card recognized. That means for trans people, the official identity documents do often not match their own gender before the official change of name and or civil status. And similarly, this can also be the case with external experience. And this often leads to unpleasant, stressful, and humiliating questions or even dangerous situations during a personal check. And therefore, the DGTI identity card is a standardized identity document that documents all self-selected personal data and shows a current passport photo so that forced outings do not occur.
Really cool. I've never heard about this. And I think it's really, really, really useful. I just recently saw a post on LinkedIn, I think, where they said something about rainbow washing because now is the 1 month of
Pride,
exactly, thank you. And they just made a comparison, I think, about from 5 to 6 credit institutes who always ask for, are you a male or female, and hasn't offered a diversity or non-option. There might be some sensibility already, but there's also still a lot to do.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. Even at Theodreson.
Yeah, for sure. And this is another really good point why it's so important that we two came together and talk about this and made this podcast episode from my point of view. So I'm still really happy here. Okay, so having heard all these attempts to foster a more including society and also in our university context, finally I would like to learn just a little bit more about your function and your daily task at the complaints office. So since when is the complaints office institutionalized at TU Dresden?
Yeah, the complaints office is based on the policy on dealing with harassment, discrimination and violence, and this was published in 2019. And since 2020, the complaints office has also been available for students. And I have to say that the TU Dresden has actually taken on a pioneering role in this area throughout Eastern Germany, because there are isolated structures at other university, but the fact that students can complain is quite new over here.
Ah, okay. But however, from your perspective, is the complaints office already sufficiently known to international students, but also to local students, or how to say it?
Well, I think too few people know about their right to complain and also about the complaints office. But I also think that far too few people are sensitive to when and where personal border violations happen, for example, because they are in a situation of dependency or cannot say anything, or because they want to put their focus elsewhere due to pressure to perform, or because the border violations are already so normal that they are not even perceived as actual border violations, or they are afraid that no one is going to believe them. So raising awareness is therefore the most important step towards prevention and to publicate the complaints office, actually.
Oh, okay, I see. That makes totally sense. For me, from my personal perspective, I think the first step would to really figure out, okay, where are my boundaries? How to react when someone is stepping over my personal boundaries? And to be honest, I wasn't aware that there are some institutionalized complaints offices or guidelines about gender-sensitive language. So I've learned a lot already, and I'm really happy, but I'm also aware there are still lots to do. And we'll see we can do all together. Sum up. Could you kindly advise an example procedure when a person is getting in touch with you at the complaints office? I mean, like, is it anonymous? What are the boundaries of function at the university? And where else can individuals or persons affected ask for support? You mentioned already some advisory service besides the institutionalized at the university, but maybe, yeah, I would be happy, and most probably some more people would be happy to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, you can contact the complaints office in different kind of ways, like by email, by normal mail. I don't know if somebody used it, or by telephone. And depending on the medium, you can first decide for yourself whether you want to give your name or your subject or not. And then it depends on the concern. Most people who contact the complaints office are looking for advice on how to proceed. That can be a mediation, or I direct them to suitable advisory services in Dresden, as as you said before, and then there are people who want to file a complaint. And this means that the procedure is about the request to check to what extent harassment, discrimination, or violence occurred in order to take measures to prevent a repetition. So I then question all the persons being involved. I look at all the evidence and, well, if necessary, and then work out recommendations in direct exchange with the person being involved, but also with other officers such as the legal department or the gender equality commissioner. And these can relate to sanctions, for example, exclusion from seminars, but also to more strategic or structural aspects. And this is the context in which, for example, the career peer counseling came into being. And the limits of those procedures are, of course, like many-sided. If something happens in private, for example, at a party of students, it can lead to a person who is no longer attending a course because she's afraid of meeting somebody who had done violence to her or him or the person. And actually, as a complaints office, we are not really responsible because it happened in private. But however, we do, of course, take care of it in advisory capacity. And it's also often not possible to implement recommendation because the university itself is a huge and large administrative system with a lot of coordination processes, a lot of persons being involved. And these mills actually often grind very, very slowly. So what is important for us at the end, even when those recommendations are not being implemented, is like participation, sensitization, and empowerment. And if we don't offer like events or formats for this request, we work together with various instances here in Dresden, like Gerede e.V., which advises on gender diversity. Then there's, for example, the RAA, and it advises on right-wing motivated and racist violence. And for example, the DIK advises on incidents of stalking. And now there comes my kind of advertisement, because a lot of advisory services are listed on my website. And yeah, feel free to visit this website. There's a lot of information.
Self-advertisement for this really important thing. I feel 100%. Thanks for these informations. And we will also link, if this is fine for you, from our fun website directly to the complaints office. So we have advertisement from two sides then.
Love it.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for all these insights. So it just popped up in my mind, maybe we could also make some kind of Mensa table once in a month where we can talk with people. I mean, more not in such a personal context, but maybe raise some awareness about these topics. So let's keep this in mind. And you stay tuned. We'll see if we have something more on the pipeline for you. So we're getting slowly, or quite fast actually, to the end of our episode so far. But are there any workshops right now in place to sensitize TU Dresden employees and teaching assignments regarding language, discrimination, cultural differences, etc., etc.? So what we have talked about beforehand. I'm really keen to learn about that.
Well, I mentioned my website, and there are a lot of events which had happened, but there are also a lot of events which will happen. For example, the 25th of November, that is the day of the elimination of violence against women. There's a huge program which is coming to sensitize for this topic. But there's also the Center for Continuing Education here at TU Dresden, and there's this sprint program for employees who offers various workshops on these kind of topics. If you subscribe, for example, to the newsletter of the Culture magazine of the Prorector for University Culture, you can also see a lot of offers on a regular basis. And I think there are different student groups like GNOW or what, who establish like non-discriminatory or like formats or events who deal with those kind of topics.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. GNOW, really cool student group, or also Frauenumweltnetzwerk fund. We are also trying to do a little bit more in this direction, but slowly, slowly, as you said, the material reason structures are sometimes not fastest one, but I think this is not something what we cannot say, because most people know these struggle with big universities. It's not only a TU reason.
Totally.
Thank you so much for all these really good insights and your important job here at TU Dresden. So from my side, I can only admit to everyone who's listening right now, if you have any struggles, just get in contact with Anja Wiede. She's a really cool, smart and sensitive person, and you're not alone when you are struggling. Always look out for help and check your boundaries, and also brave to make a first step forward, I would say. Last but not least, we talked a lot about interesting topics and gender issues, discriminations, etc., violence. So for the future, do you have any wishes, or is there something you would like to comment on?
The future question. Well, I would wish that everyone can be like different and live without fear and exclusion, and that they can develop so freely in their character, so that everyone can lead a pacified life, independent of national borders. And well, that's a small wish from my side, just a small wish.
So it's not that small at all, I would say, because it just popped up in my mind that the Sustainable Development Goals number 5, equality. So we are also fostering a more sustainable future here in this moment, if you want to phrase it like this or frame it. So I like utopias or utopia. I would love to live in utopia. And that is why I am also working for the Female Environmental Network, or Frauenumweltnetzwerk, from the Faculty of Environmental Science. So from your perspective, in which ways can we in our work integrate or assist you in your work a little bit better? Or how do you see the work of the fund in this context? And what can we improve, or how can we help people in the future? And
well, I think actually it's pretty great that there's a network like FUN. I think a community of solidarity and of such kind of cool people is incredibly powerful, and knowing that you're not alone and that you are developing common goals is already a big step on the path of equality. That's what I would like to see in the future, like instead of isolation, loneliness and being a lone fighter. People should join forces even more in order to not fight the many injustices alone. But I would also be interested to know how FUN positions itself in relation to the gender debate. Like, is it a network for women only? How about other forms of discrimination? What exclusions are generated there? And should these exclusions continue to be generated? Well, I think that requires a lot of communication, a lot of positioning, a lot of debates, and a lot of patience. But at the end of the day, it's actually really cool that you offer these podcasts and that you raise awareness of many, many, many issues. That helps us a lot, that helps me a lot. So thank you very much for all the organization and those many, many exciting questions and your kind words.
So I blushed here. thank you so much. I just can say I'm more than happy that we finally had the chance to talk about your work in a little bit more deeper context. And for me, I was quite nervous because it's the first episode which we worked on in English. So I was nervous, but
me too. I also was so nervous.
I hope it's nevertheless somehow interesting, and everyone who's listening, please excuse any false pronunciations or wrong words in a strange context, but we did our best here, I would say. And
maybe we should do a content warning at the beginning.
A content warning.
Because of the wrong spelling. Not because of any other topics. Because of the spelling.
Yeah, might be. Yeah, it's not such a bad idea. Yeah, we will talk about this at the end. Finally, I want just want to say thank you for your time. Thank you for your really important work here at the TU Dresden. And I, from my side, learned a lot. And I'm still in the process of learning. And I think this is something what I just want to tell everyone who's studying or then entering the professional part of your lives. So stay interested, stay open-minded, and don't look away when you see something is happening near around you in your personal or also in a situation with, for you, unknown people, because every one of us has a voice and we should use it to work or to bring a better future for all of us, because all the fights we are having now and also our democracy, we really have to protect. And this is this is what I want to say. So I'm always happy to get to know cool people who are really smart and also are fighting for the same values like I do, or we as a fund also try to do. So yeah, let's keep in touch.
Let's keep in touch. Thank you,
And
Florian.
thank you so much, all of you. I hope you had fun listening to this episode. Through this.